Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Loveline with Dr. Chris starts.
3, 2, 1.
Now.
Okay, back in the saddle again. Another night of Loveline. Always here to answer your thoughts, questions, concerns. Hang out with me, kick it with me, weigh in on the topics. Phone lines are always open, 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001, or I guess you can just sit back and listen. Question of the night's up on our Loveline IG page. We're going to be talking about the Weight Watchers diet app. Essentially, all the problems that there are with diets. There's so many. But we want to hear about the most BS diet or fad trend that you've ever come across. So we'll break that on down later in the show. And of course, we'll be doing some Freak on the Streets. And later in the show, Ronald Purser, author of McMindfulness, How Mindfulness Became the New Capitalist Spirituality. This book I stumbled upon a few months ago. One of those books where I was constantly highlighting and circling things and actually kind of translating it over into some of the problems with therapy. So we'll be talking to him and all the ways that mindfulness and I guess a lot of Eastern spirituality is often misused. But right now, let's talk about something that actually isn't making headlines, but definitely should be. Katy Perry has been called out by someone who was, an actor or model in one of her videos. He claims that she pulled down his pants and his underwear and exposed his genitalia in front of a group of people while at a birthday party without consent. Now, the problem is, A, that there's been no coverage of it, and B, some of the backlash he's getting. Let's hear it in his own words.
Teens all around the world are committing suicide and they're destroying each other's minds through the same type of comments that are coming towards me. I'm a grown man. It doesn't bother me. I know 50% of the world will hate me and 50% will love me when I'm going to go into the celebrity arena. You know, I knew that.
Okay, so he kind of called it out, but doing the opposite of what I want to support him in doing, which is, I don't care if you're a man or a grown adult man. I want you to still be bothered. It's not okay for anyone to bully anyone. And it kind of ties into the issue within this larger issue, which is men are victims of violence and sexual violence and domestic abuse. But it tends to be both underreported and undersupported. So much so that this guy, in coming forward, is getting bullied by her friends and family members. And let me just read you a little bit of a quote. They're defending her vigorously, attacking this guy. His name is, what's his name?
Josh Kloss.
And basically saying, quote, a real man doesn't do what you're doing. That is the definition of toxic masculinity, by saying, if you were a real man, you would be what? Keeping your mouth closed at having been sexual assaulted? If you were a real man, you would what? Find the pleasure and joy in this pop star wanting to pull your genitalia out and embarrass you publicly. I'm not quite sure what they're trying to lean on, but again, so disempowering. And know this, she was his employer. It was with her friends after having been in her music video, and that's a power imbalance. And violence and sexual assault are never okay. It can't be a gendered issue. We can't say it's okay as long as it's going from a female to a male. Look, I was talking about this earlier. Just watching sitcoms, I still see it shown as appropriate and funny when a female hits a male. In sitcoms, I still see it. The audience laughs. We don't bat an eyelash. That's abuse. That's violence. That's assault. That's not ever, ever, ever okay. But it's more problematic when a male comes forward and we just don't legitimize that. And there's no coverage of this. I was scrolling through social media, even Googling his name, and like two things came up. And, you know, again, that's the layer upon layer of damage around assault like this is, number one, the trauma of having something happen. And I don't know about you, but I don't want publicly to have someone just pull my genitalia out. I don't think any of us do. But then the second layer is when it's gendered and it's not taken seriously because you're a man and you're wondering, will people believe me? Will people take it seriously? And then the third layer is when you come forward, you've pushed through those first two elements, and then you're getting bullied publicly. So I'll be curious to see if anyone's going to call Katy Perry out. But just to add to the storyline, this isn't the first time that she's had an allegation of sexual misconduct against her. A Russian journalist, Tina Kandelaki, claims that Perry touched her without consent and kissed her while intoxicated at an industry party. So that's two people coming forward. And then there's another instance which some people, again, kind of water down. But a contestant on American Idol, while she was one of the judges, maybe she still is, I don't know, I don't follow her career, it's not my kind of music, she kissed him. He had never been kissed. She grabbed his face, leaned over and kissed him. You know, again, if we would see a male doing that to a female, we'd be very uncomfortable. We have to be as uncomfortable when we see a female doing it to a male. Male violence and sexual assault is just never okay. All right. Alabama student, sticking with the gendered problems, was left out of her yearbook because she wore a tuxedo instead of a dress. Yes. Student in Alabama wore tuxedo instead of a dress for a high school photo. And here we go. When she got her yearbook, her name had the words "not pictured" next to it. Could you imagine? You go in school, you're all excited for your photo, you wear something that you feel comfortable in, that you think you look great in, that makes sense to you. And because you're quote unquote a girl and you're not wearing a dress, they leave your photo out and instead put the words "not pictured." That's harsh. But we got more details on our website. We are channelq.com. We got the stories up there if you want to read along a little bit more. Luckily, the school attendants coming forward saying, yep, we have longstanding school guidelines. But we're going to reevaluate those guidelines to consider what changes, if any, need to be made. You need to make a lot, right? Make a big, bold statement that we support people's expression of gender and whatever they want to wear. Why? Because it doesn't matter. God bless. All right. Coming up next, Ronald Purser, McMindfulness. How is spirituality being misused in our capitalist culture? Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. 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 This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right. We got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. Tonight's question is, what is the most BS diet or fad trend? It's a mouthful that you've ever heard of. Why? Because we're going to be talking about a new dangerous app Weight Watchers has put out there for children. It's a big problem. But more importantly, right now, we got Dr. Ronald Purser, author of McMindfulness with us. Thanks for being on the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let me walk you through my journey of your book. I stumbled upon your book. And the topic has always been really fascinating to me, the whole concept of just, you know, capitalism and the misuse of Eastern spirituality. So I was on an airplane and I was flipping through, and I tell you, I must have gone through at least a full highlighter highlighting things.
Wow. That's great.
It's always a good sign. So for my listeners that aren't familiar with mindfulness, what would you give as the most general operational definition of mindfulness?
Of mindfulness?
Yes.
Well, are you talking about the contemporary form, modern mindfulness?
I guess before we kind of unpack the way we've, you know, westernized it, what would just be like the easy elevator pitch for those that just have no idea what we're talking about?
Well, mindfulness is a technique, a very important practice that originated in the Buddhist tradition, but it was only one part of a very integrated path of spiritual development. So it also included ethical development, it included meditation, and it also included teachings on wisdom. And it was meant to actually become less self-centered and less selfish, and actually see the illusory nature of the sense that we are separate individuals, and so that we would have this kind of spiritual awakening to see that we're all interconnected, all interdependent, and as a result of that, we would kind of cultivate this natural sort of compassion towards all beings.
I love the use of the word compassion. You keep using compassion and ethics. Right.
And let me just say that compassion, you know, the actual meaning of compassion means to suffer with others, you know, to really feel other people's suffering and to do something about it, to do something that's skillful about that. And so that was the original intention of mindfulness.
And what's interesting is, so as I was reading your book, and we'll get into this in a minute, I was looking at the back and I was looking at what you do. And I said, professor of management at San Francisco State University. I thought, what is your connection to mindfulness? So then I dig deeper and I dig deeper. You're an ordained Zen Dharma teacher.
Yes. Yeah, right. In the Korean Taigo Zen order of Korean Zen, yes.
Okay, so you're one of those people that is within, talking about all the issues, not standing outside, kind of throwing the rocks. So I was talking a few weeks ago about an article that kind of covers and bumps into some things you're talking about. And so for my listeners, I'm also trying to swoop in about self-care, what's self-care? And what I liked about your work in the book is you start looking at how it's misused in corporate culture. And one would say, oh, well, I work at this corporation and they're offering, you know, yoga and mindfulness. What a gift. They're looking out for our mental health. But it turns out what?
Well, it turns out, first of all, that these programs and corporations are basically ways to pacify employees. Because there's so much stress in corporations today. There's no doubt about it. I mean, that's why corporations are so interested in mindfulness. It's because they're losing $300 billion a year in stress-related absences. So mindfulness programs, all sorts of wellness programs are very, very appealing to corporations right now. But that takes the hook. Takes responsibility off corporations. So basically, they're shifting the burden onto individuals to cope and to adjust to the corporate conditions, these working conditions that are atrocious in terms of the amount of hours people have to work, the workload, bosses that are breathing down their neck, they're doing work that's meaningless, there's the threat of layoffs, and so we see a tremendous amount of interest in these programs now, which basically work as kind of a form of self-discipline.
Yeah.
Basically saying, look, yeah, we know you're stressed out, and we have the cure. We have the solution. So it basically individualizes what are essentially structural and systemic problems that have nothing to do with being distracted. We're talking about workplace stresses that are structural in nature.
Well, and that's what comes into my office as a therapist, right? Are people either coming in and they're saying, you know, I'm anxious, I'm depressed, my marriage is falling apart, I don't have time with my family, something's wrong with me. How do I work on my anxiety and depression? And I'm one of the few therapists that talks about systemic and institutional issues. And I say to them, you're not supposed to be able to keep up with the expectations and demands of our culture, right? And they turn to these solutions thinking that they should be able to manage all of this. And it's just not working. So we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to talk about a couple terms that you use in your book that I think are really powerful. Self-centered freedoms and the problem with the neoliberalism of me, because I also see that showing up in some of the couples work I do. So we come back, we're going to be talking more about that. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right. Interesting choice of coming back with a little Katy Perry. Just so y'all know, she's someone who needs to learn consent culture and some boundaries. We're gonna reach out to her, maybe have her on the show. We can talk about it a little bit. Question of the night's up on our Loveline IG page. Tonight's question is BS diet fads and trends. Why? Because diets don't work and they're dangerous. We're going to break that on down later in the show. But right now we're sitting down with Dr. Ronald Purser, author of McMindfulness. All right. Can I read a quote back at you that is yours that literally opened your book essentially and was what pulled me in? You said, anything that offers success in our unjust society without trying to change it is not revolutionary. Why I loved that, because it ties into another concept you talk about, self-centered freedoms. Unpack that for us.
Well, I think that's part of why mindfulness has been so popular in a way, because it's sold as an approach for self-care. But what it does is it's very complicit with neoliberal values, which frames mindfulness as a privatized practice. And essentially what that does is that it adheres to the ideology that it's the individual who needs to learn to adapt to our political and economic conditions. So there's little attention that's paid to the importance of collective action. So one constantly hears the trope among mindfulness teachers that the only real change comes from within. And I think that's really doing a disservice because it puts the burden on individuals.
And also, let me just add in there, it's also pretty homophobic, racist, fatphobic, because it ignores that if you're a person of color and you're living in a racist culture, you can only do so much internal work, nor should you have to learn how to adapt to that. We live in a homophobic culture. Someone who's gay shouldn't have to do the internal work of learning how to adapt to that, right? Culture needs to work on itself as well, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of whitewashing in the mindfulness movement, too, because if you really look closely, it's really an elite social movement led by white, upper middle class males that have an incredible amount of social capital. So they've been able to control the discourse and the dialogue in terms of mainstream public discourse. So I think you're absolutely right. You know, basically, it's promoting mindfulness as a way to help people survive within a very exploitative capitalist system.
Right.
Rather than helping people wake up and to change the reality of their subjugation to these systems. So,
and also, like what you're saying, and what you're also saying earlier that I thought was powerful is how it leaves out the ethics and the centering of compassion, which was a key part of all of this. But somehow in Western America, we're doing yoga to get a better butt and mindfulness to be able to work longer hours. But what about the ethics? What about the pushing back on the greed, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the key tenets is to eradicate greed, anger, hatred, and delusion. These are the three mental poisons. And the problem is that these three mental poisons have also become institutionalized and taken on a life of their own in our society. So just focusing on our own individual liberation, our own individual salvation is not enough now in terms of what we're dealing with in the society that we're living in. So a lot of these self-care, self-help techniques are maybe unwittingly complicit with what neoliberalism wants us to be, is the idea that the individual is the only way to solve social problems. So we have to take full responsibility, and that's really kind of a trap. It's a way that it keeps us from forming into collectives and forming into communities.
Which is what you kind of, at the end of the book, lead us to as essentially one of the solutions, right? Social mindfulness.
Yeah.
Repairing social bonds, civic responsibility. I loved all of that. I think that's so powerful. I mean, that's one of the things I try to use in my office is repair, reconnect, reunite. Like, that's how we push back on all this.
Absolutely. And the individualizing of social problems, this is what really triggered me to write the book, because of basically the mainstream mindfulness movement was sending message. It sounded almost like the same message that Margaret Thatcher was saying in the early 1880s, that there's no such thing as a society. There's only individuals.
Oof.
And, I just couldn't live with that. You know, I think you're absolutely right that we're in a period of time now, especially with the ecological crisis, that we can only solve these problems collectively. We have to come together, and we can redirect these practices to help us deal with these collective problems.
And I love that. And I love that you landed the book in closing with the solutions, because that's what a lot of people sometimes struggle with, is what do we do about this? So I love the mission. Your book is McMindfulness, Dr. Ronald Purser. Thank you so much for your time. And also thank you so much for your book. It was really transformative for me. We're going to put it on our social media.
Thank you, Chris.
Awesome.
Thank
Have a great rest of your night. All right, when we come back, we're going to be sliding into those DMs. You're listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Love line.
This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Question of the night. It's up on our Loveline IG page. It's about the most BS diet fad or trend. Give us a call, 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001. Y'all love sliding into my DMs to tell me everything, but you don't want to call and hang out with me. I'm going to turn my DMs off. But I want to hear your thoughts on tonight's topic. We were just talking with Ronald Purser about the misuse of mindfulness. It's a word that gets slung around. People are kind of familiar with it, but we're talking about how it's used to keep people in jobs that aren't quite working for them, where the work is really about making larger social change so that we can enjoy our jobs. But we're also going to come back later and be talking about Weight Watchers. They changed their name to WW. We see you still. We know who you are, Weight Watchers. Anything rooted in weight loss and diet culture is going to definitely be problematic. So we're going to be talking about something they're doing, releasing an app for kids. Because let's start young. Let's start young with body shaming issues. We'll be talking about that. Give me a call, though. I'd love to hear your thoughts. But right now, it's time to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding into DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sexy world, and we want you to explore with confidence. All right, here we go. I love when people ask me about porn. I can't stop talking about it. Hey, Dr. Chris, broad question. What do you think are the positive and negative effects that porn has on our society? I don't talk much about the negative ones because everyone does, and there's tons of stuff out there. And what often gets left out of the conversation is the positives. Those books aren't well-rounded. The negatives are just that it's often looked at to give us sex education, and it shouldn't. That's the negatives. Positives helps normalize diverse sex acts. It helps remind us that sexuality is far bigger and more diversified than just penetration. It also gets us comfortable with sexuality and seeing sex. And for those that have non-normative bodies, it can actually increase self-esteem because I recommend body positive and feminist porn, of which there is now a lot more. And I tell people to watch porn that reflects back the kind of body they have and a diversity, because our sexuality is far more plastic and malleable than we realize, and porn helps us see that. Also gives sex to single people. Everyone has a right to sexuality, and people that aren't currently in a partnered relationship, porn is great for sex life. Also, for people that have a higher sex drive than maybe their partner, if they're in a monogamous relationship, porn helps save monogamous relationships. What else does it do? For some, it's a career choice. Make a living out of it. Masturbation and porn use also is a really important part of having what we call sexual autonomy. The idea that you have control of your own sexuality. Remember, if you're in a partnered relationship, that's about partnered sex. But your solo sex life, that's none of your partner's business. That's your private sexuality. That's with you and yourself. That's where you realize you're autonomous and that your sexuality isn't always tied to someone else. That's something that's really, really, really powerful. And also, like, I just love pointing out that it's a needed counterbalance to our sex phobic culture, and that as soon as we have a healthy relationship with sexuality, we won't have such a thing called porn. It'll just be another form of art, because that's what porn is. Porn's existed since the beginning of time. It's always been with us, and it always will be. It's just we put it in a special category. We put a lot more pressure on it than we do on any other form of art. We're not constantly talking about the negatives of, you know, violent movies and the sexism. I mean, we're starting to, but we don't put the same pressure on it as we do other things. Slide into DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. Want you to explore with confidence. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about Weight Watchers. Oh, or as I should say, WW. Trying to hide under the radar. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. We got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. Tonight's question is, what's the most BS diet fad or trend you've come across, heard, maybe even tried, maybe had recommended to you? It's pretty pervasive in our culture, and that's why we are, oh my gosh, all of us in the mental health world, all of us in the no diet dietitian world, all of us in the intuitive eating world, all of us healthy ones, those in the eating disorder world, we're horrified at what Weight Watchers is doing right now. First off, I didn't realize this, but they've changed their name to WW. I'm not 100% sure what that is. Maybe it's cooler branding or simplified. But they basically are catching fire because they released a new weight loss app for kids. Okay, let's break it down. it's sometimes some of these things every now and then that come across my desk. I'm like, wow, we really have to explain this one. But yeah, this is horrifying. There's a lot of people that are thinking, well, obesity is a problem in our culture, but let's talk about this. So why is this a problem? Let's talk really broad and then we'll narrow it down. Dieting is one of the number one predictors of eating disorders. Okay. The research shows that dieting is, listen to this word, the most robust predictor of developing an eating disorder. Starting that mind frame and that struggle with someone as young as the app says 8, you're setting them up for something that they're already going to encounter in their lifetime, but you're starting it sooner. There are children that are already at the age of 4, 6, 8, and 12, already hyper aware of their body. And for those that aren't meeting the quote unquote body standard, the struggle's already beginning because we live in a culture that's constantly reflecting back that there's one specific way to look to be healthy. Gyms are problematic for doing that. Food is problematic for doing that. Television, fashion, all of that. And so this app is just making it even more profound because essentially what it's doing is it's a food tracker, essentially a calorie tracker for kids to plug in all the things that they're eating to start to already shame food, create the idea that there's such a thing as bad foods, and also this whole idea about food anxiety. Now, the American Academy of Pediatrics, they released guidelines warning parents about the risks of focusing on weight loss and dieting with children. They say, don't do it. Why do they say that? Well, because again, let's go back. Dieting is the most robust predictor of developing an eating disorder, aka a problematic relationship with food. And again, we live in a culture where no one is going to escape that stress, but we don't want to put it on someone younger and earlier. What we want to do is the opposite. We want to prepare them with the tools and resources to be able to navigate and manage that better. The whole idea that health can exist at every single size, that looking at someone's body is not a predictor of health. You don't send your doctor a snapshot of you shirtless for them to diagnose your health. You have to go in and get blood work and test. So the American Academy of Pediatrics is saying, please stop doing this. And they're saying, we have to help them have a healthy body image. We have to help them learn that there's no such thing as a bad food. We have to help them learn that you should eat when you're hungry and listen to your body. Because what's happening is we're training people to not have any access to their hunger cues. People are so disconnected from what being hungry feels like and feeling satiated that we're relying on portion sizing. Everyone's body is different. Everyone's energy needs are going to be different as well. We can't break it down and decontextualize things. This is also a problem because women, a lot of this research is done around women, which is also problematic because men absolutely have a lot of body dysmorphia and are part of the eating disordered culture, but there's a lot of shame in it. So a lot of research is on women, but women whose parents made comments about their weight in childhood also have higher levels of body dissatisfaction, clearly. Dieting doesn't work. Between 91 and 95% of diets fail. Hear that number. 91 to 90% of diets fail, 95%. And in fact, I think it's like 1 to 3 years, the same weight will be put on or more, but now you also have the shame and guilt around that. So there's a lot of people coming out and talking about this. I hope the conversation keeps continuing because, again, it shouldn't be around learning how to have an adverse relationship to your body or to food. The work is around learning how to not be afraid of food, learning how to allow your body to be what weight it wants to be. But there's more details on our website, wearechannelq.com. Put up some articles there. You can track a little bit. Let's also talk quickly about a new trend. It's called Sober Curious. This is something that I am seeing coming into my clinical practice. This is people who don't meet the criteria for drug and alcohol addiction, but they're people that are taking into account what role drugs and alcohol might be in their life. Even though things aren't quote unquote problematic, they are starting to want to talk about, is this still having a negative impact? Is this not allowing me to be present to my life in the way I want? And basically, it's folks that don't need to be sober, but they are talking about the benefits of cutting down or cutting back, and also people that are concerned with how it's impacting their social and even professional lives. I mean, we've all been to those work events where a colleague is drunk, saying and doing things that they would not want to know that they were saying or doing. And also just social events, right? You know, alcohol has a lot of social benefits. A lot of people thrive by being able to have a drink, just like some people take other things to deal with their anxiety. But there's also some downsides. And so I like the whole idea of sober curious, you know, not ready to completely cut it out, but wanting to kind of track it, bring more consciousness, be more aware of the role it's playing. And also just paying attention to kind of the people they're hanging around. Is alcohol a centralized piece of everything they do socially? Because people that take drinking breaks or try to minimize or try to cut back have some really profound positive impacts. You don't need to cut it out maybe 100%. But just kind of shrink down the role that it's playing in your life. Coming up next, we're going to be doing a little Freak on the Streets and then Question of the Night. So go on our Love Line IG page. Got some time to weigh in on that one. You're listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line. This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
Question of the Night. It's up on our Love Line IG page. Most BS diet fatter trend you've come across. Had recommended to you. Oh, there's just so many. I've been pretty good about fighting it off. Every now and then, you know, you're trapped in some kind of gym culture, diet culture conversation. I'm that guy that's like, you know what? I actually don't want to hear about your meal plan. I actually don't want to hear about your cheat day. Not too interesting. So I've been pretty good about staying away from that, but I want to hear yours. So right now, though, it's time for some Freak on the Streets.
I'm engaged, but I don't think my fiance's parents like me. I tried everything, and they think their son can do better than me. We went to a wedding on the East Coast, and after a huge argument with his family, they want us to attend a family therapy session in New York. That's a lot because we just came back from the wedding, and we live in L.A. I've asked about alternatives like Skyping into the sessions or picking another date to fly out, but she insists that if we don't make it out there this weekend, she's cutting us out of the family. What should I do? And do I let my fiance represent the both of us?
Whoa. First off, condolences. That is an interesting family system to be getting brought into. It sounds like his parents have really bad boundaries. They don't have to like you. He chose you and loves you and wants to be with you. They have to learn how to accept you. They need therapy. They have to go to therapy and figure out why are we unable to find the good in this person that our son has. Because unless you've done something egregious, which let's just assume you have, and I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt, then it's their issue. You don't need to go anywhere to defend who you are. If you have good ethics and character, that's on them. And I don't, you know, how rude. I can't imagine telling someone that you think that their son can do better, assuming you've done nothing egregious. And a fight like that is not an indication of needing family therapy. If their work is around having compassion and acceptance, that's their own solo journey. I think it's fair also to ask your fiance to manage that. You don't have to have a relationship with them. He does. And so I'd want him to go to them and say, listen, your thoughts about my wife are none of my business. You keep that to yourself. And if you want us to come around, you'll respect her and you'll respect me. Otherwise, we won't. And so I would ask him to set some boundaries. And again, if they're not going to honor that, he can have a relationship with his family. You don't have to. That's unfortunate because one of the great parts about being in a relationship sometimes is having more people brought in your family, but not everyone's healthy enough to be brought in. And so it's acceptable for you to say, if that's how they're going to treat me, I don't want to be around them. You have a relationship with them. I'll support that, but I'm staying outside of it. And I support him in saying the same thing to them. I have a relationship with her and you need to accept that or you'll see me solo, which means sometimes not on the holidays because I want to spend it with her. So no, I don't think you fly and I don't think you let them use, you know, that threat. They're threatening you. That's not a good way to enter therapy, is threaten like that. So no, set a boundary, self-love, self-care, and tell your boyfriend, husband, what I can't remember if you said he got married yet or not. I zoned out during that part. Tell him to deal with his family. There you go. All right. We got another one.
Hi, Dr. Chris. I was wondering, when is a good time to ask somebody to be your significant other or, I guess, you know, your girlfriend? Because, like, I'm just kind of trying to figure out the loops of when you're going through the dating and you've kind of become exclusive and, you know, it feels like the right person and you don't have any, like, non-committal issues yourself. You're just kind of, you know, scared and you're not sure, like, if taking that big step, you know, is, like, the right time or, like, is there supposed to be a right time, like, in terms of, like, months or days? Like, what would you say, like, is the best way to approach that next step?
Okay, so I have two answers. The global answer and then the more specific answer. The global is there's no right time. I like people being authentic, and if you're interested, then you ask. But my question to you, because your question, the global answer is there's no right time, right? But to you, I'd say, do you feel confident in knowing who they are? Because you don't want to ask for a relationship with someone that you don't feel like you know well enough to be able to stand behind the yes, if you get one, right? Sometimes people, while in early crush, while not knowing the person, make a lot of assumptions, ask for monogamy and commitment, and then weeks in, when they really find out more about the person, are like, oh, how do I back out of that? So if you really know them, because remember, there's a difference between chemistry and compatibility. Chemistry is, I'm drawn to you, I think you're hot, I love spending time with you, and that happens early on. But compatibility often takes more time to really assess. Like, what's our two personalities like when we come together during conflict? So I tell people, if you haven't really had any conflict yet, you haven't really been able to assess full compatibility. Like, how do we manage when things aren't feeling so great? And you might want to wait until some of that can happen before you try to kind of move into a label and a structure, you know? So there you go, y'all. All right. Question of the night. It's up on our Loveline IG page. Wait on that one. It's about the BS diet fads and trends. Oh, there are so many and they just keep coming. Breaking that down later in the show. And then, of course, line back in the DMs. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right. Little Lizzo. Keeping it right. Getting our minds where they need to be. Making our bodies move a little bit. I'm feeling it. Okay, question of the night. What is the most BS diet, fatter trend? Why? Because mental health is about having a healthy relationship to your body and food. And diet culture and gym culture actually do the opposite. And they should not be allowed to use the word health in any of their descriptions or uses. Because if you're talking about health, you better be including mental health. And being afraid of food and not learning how to allow your body to exist as it is not healthy. So let's talk about some BS diet fads and trends. Can't wait to hear these. Here's a good one. The banana diet. Haven't heard that one. Although I might have been on that one for a while. You know what I mean? All right, I can't. Cabbage soup. I've heard of that one before. I actually am not mad at that. I like cabbage. I'm sure that would get old. But, you know, someone said celery juice. Oh, you mean just water? Yeah, because celery juice is mainly just water. I didn't know there was a diet, though. I know that there's a medical medium, what would you call it? Intervention or treatment for psoriasis and eczema and about a zillion other things. I haven't ever tried that one though. Let's see. Gyms that have you pay a sum of money and you have to lose a certain amount in a certain amount of time. Oh, I'm not familiar with that. But that would be a diet trend. Yes. The butter diet for HIV mentioned a few times in Pose. So strange. Yeah, I mean, we're moving outside of, is that for weight, keeping weight on? Maybe eating the fat, calories, and I don't know. My original degree was in nutrition and food science at NYU. And I know that in class, we would talk a lot about people that were trying to put weight on to eat a lot of peanut butter. Yeah. So maybe butter somewhere along that lines. Although I wouldn't recommend consuming dairy. Because there's a lot of things wrong with that. But anywho, someone said, I found a low-fat cookbook with a snack recipe for flavored ice cubes. Yes, that's real. Flavored ice cubes, flavored water. That's where we're at. Mm-hmm. Chew on these calorie-less flavored water cubes. All in the pursuit of what? Again, not health. That's not health. And again, I'm going on with the mental health component, which is that kind of restriction is what leads to binge cycles. When you restrict and you're on a caloric deficit all day long, that's why people also binge at night. And there's no mental health in going throughout the entire day battling healthy hunger signals. The purple diet only. The purple diet, where you only eat purple foods. How many purple foods are there? Or is that the... I mean, maybe that's what it is. You can have purple yams, purple cauliflower, eggplant, and there you go. It's going to get you to, it's going to be a diet. Yeah. That's real. Yeah. And I hate eggplant. So that would leave me with just the yams and the cauliflower. Purple carrots as well. The baby food diet. Now, I don't know. I'm okay with that one. Not as a diet, but I would eat, baby food's good. It's pureed fruit. And those little creepy finger hot dogs. Know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
They fit in that little jar. They look like little fingers. It creeps me out every time I see them in Whole Foods. Little finger nubs. Yeah, little pinkies. Little baby pinkies. It's so creepy. All of them, someone said. As someone with an eating disorder, I want to crawl in a hole to avoid them. Yeah. Trigger everywhere. This one, unfortunately, I can't read, but you have my full support, and I enjoy doing that on the weekends, but that is not food consumption. But thank you for that one, and you know who you are. Let's read this one. Drinkable meal replacements. So unhealthy and misses the point of eating to nourish. Yeah, because a lot of those meal replacements, if you look at the ingredients, it's not even whole foods. It's chemical vitamins and natural, like artificial sweeteners. And it's kind of a mess in there. Oh, here's another interesting one. The pink diet. Only eating pink foods. Now, again, how many pink foods are there? I can't even think of one pink food. Salmon? Name a pink food.
Pink cauliflower.
Salmon. Figs? Figs aren't. Ish. That's more purple, no? Watermelon? All right. Watermelon and salmon?
Raw chicken.
Raw chicken, yeah. God bless that one. Someone said, my brother thinks I'm unhealthy because I eat organic sweet potatoes, black beans, and rice because it's not keto, yet all he eats is steak and cheese. Yes, he is ripped, but there's no way he's healthy. You got my support on that one. Steak and cheese, neither one of those are healthy foods. But black beans, rice, and sweet potatoes, that's delicious. I'm going home out for dinner. Thanks for the heads up. Let's do another one. My best friend swears by Weight Watchers, but I can never. You have to eat whatever you want, basically, but you have a certain amount of points. She literally only eats lean cuisines for every meal and gets excited that she's dropping weight, but her diet is literally all processed. All processed and high sodium. I threw that sodium part in myself. All right, we got to go, though. When we come back, we're going to be sliding into those DMs. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, it's that time of the night. Sliding back into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding into the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sex of world. We want you to explore it with confidence. All right, here we go. These are some good ones. My husband and I, there's not even a hello. We just go all in right into the question. My husband and I haven't had sex for over 2 years. We have a short vacation planned for our anniversary, and I'm not sure if I can really get aroused by him anymore. I'm scared of rejecting him during the trip. Any tips for reigniting some sort of attraction for a longtime partner? Okay. Now, I'm going to zero in on your question and the wording you're using. And I don't know if it's the wording you mean to use, so I'm going to try to answer it both ways. Reigniting attraction? No. One cannot reignite attraction or chemistry. It's really hard to create. I'm thankful for that. I don't want there to be a way to manipulate people into feeling sexual attraction or arousal to someone they don't. I think that has to be have some acceptability. Now, maybe you were meaning to say, is there a way to reignite sexual fun and energy and prioritization and make me want it more and create some desire and arousal? That, yes. So you have to separate that out. Because if you're just not feeling chemistry attraction to your partner, could it be that there's some things that are getting in the way where you're not getting along and there's a lot of stresses and you don't associate being relaxed around them? Sure. And you can work through that. But if you're just generally saying, well, no, things are well, it's just I'm not attracted, there's no chemistry, then you're going to maintain probably a sexless relationship. I don't advise people to force themselves to have sex with someone they're not attracted to. It's a misuse of our sexual psychology and disembodiment, and we shouldn't be forcing our bodies into pleasure like that. I just don't think that's the point. And so if the attraction is gone, you do need to kind of settle into having a lower sexual relationship. You haven't sex in 2 years. Maybe that's okay. I don't know if you're just your fear is just more about rejecting him during the trip or the loss of sex. Some people don't have a sexual relationship. So the fear of rejecting him, I would say this. Are you open to some things? Because when people make a bid for our attention, sometimes we can just offer cuddling or mutual masturbation or oral just on them. You know, see what you are willing to do. Because sometimes when we say sex, we mean penetration. And maybe you're not open for that after not having done that for 2 years. But what are you open to? That might be erotic or sensual or, you know, affectionate based. Are you open to getting a massage or giving a massage? Because that's a great way to kind of feel close and connected. It doesn't have to be penetration. But, you know, sometimes the sex we've been having isn't even worth having. And so make sure that you're open to things that are fun. Make sure you're open to asking for your partner from your partner the kind of sex you want to have and open to the sex that they want to have. Because sometimes sex we're having isn't worth wanting, and that's why we don't want it. And we have to go into our vulnerability of asking for the things that we would want that would be fun. So some work to do around that. Hang in there, though. We have time for another 1 minute. Not so much. Wow, this next one's a really long one. So let's save this one because I don't want to blow through this in a minute. So hold that. All right. So tomorrow we have a really important show. I'm really excited. Harnam Kaur is going to be with us. And she is someone who is a body positivity activist, but it's a really fascinating entry point. She is a bearded woman. Now, a lot of us have been raised in cultures or social environments where we've been bullied. This is a really big one, and she's found a way through it after spending many years of her life trying to maintain and hide that. She's said, I'm going to just kind of embrace my body the way it is and find beauty and pleasure in that. And she's blowing up because she's part of a really important movement where people aren't shaming what is naturally going on for them. So she's going to be joining us. We're talking about that journey, which I think is a powerful one that we can all learn something from. We'll be back tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And as always, our shows are podcasted at the WeAreChannelQ.com page, so you can binge me. I like being able to say that. Thanks for hanging out with me tonight. See you tomorrow. You guys have an awesome, awesome night.